Can't Mistake Their Anthology, a Girls Aloud commentary podcast from The Record Doctor.
Whenever you're ready.
Greetings, fellow Alouders, and welcome to episode one of You Can't Mistake Their Anthology, the world's very first Girls Aloud commentary podcast, celebrating two decades of excellence as we approach the year of their 20th anniversary. My name is Adam Eve, aka The Record Doctor, and I will be your friendly host of the pod, and each month I will be joined by some very special guests as they help me break down every single Girls Aloud era in very specific and great detail. Everything from their debut on Popstars The Rivals, each and every one of their groundbreaking albums and tours, autobiographies, DVD releases, movies, and every single one of their solo endeavors. When I say this podcast plans on covering everything, I genuinely mean everything. Oh, well, everything from an officially released standpoint, at least. Not only that, but you'll also get entire episodes dedicated to the Girls Aloud docuseries Off the Record, Ghost Hunting with Girls Aloud, The Passions of Girls Aloud, and as I mentioned before, even their autobiographies, discussing and dissecting the songs, videos, projects, tours, TV specials, and records that made Girls Aloud the greatest pop group of the 21st century. As a huge Girls Aloud stan, I am just so deliriously happy to release this podcast into the digital world and reinforce exactly why the love many of us have for them as a group runs so deep. I'll talk about this at length in the episodes for the Chemistry Era and the 10 Tour, but basically in 2006, I met the girls in Melbourne out the front of the Channel 10 studios and managed to get a group photo with all of them, as well as autographs on my Aloud vinyl. And then in 2013, I quit my new job after 3 months, travelled overseas for the very first time in my life, and planned a whole European holiday around 3 different dates of the Girls Aloud 10 Tour. I even ended up on the bloody 10 Tour DVD and MTV screening, shedding a tear in high definition as I sang along to I'll Stand By You. But my God, in hindsight, looking back over this past year, I'm so eternally grateful that I put myself into all of that debt just to see them live, because while I obviously had no idea at the time, that would be the very last time I would see them perform together as the 5 most important girls of any pop group. And I was at that very last show too, and bloody hell, all the crying that went on that night. The fans literally stopped traffic at one point, scream singing through hysterical tears as they sang I'll Stand By You in the middle of a major CBD street. I've never seen or experienced anything quite like it. With everything the fanbase has been through over the last few months, I figured that now was the best time to start talking about the Aloud legacy, cementing just how important the girls and their music is to so many of us. There are a lot of podcasts out there and many who have brilliantly covered specific Girls Aloud albums or eras, but it was a bit of a shock to me that there were no podcasts dedicated solely to my Pop Force 5. That all changes as of now, and I'm very excited to share just exactly what I plan on doing with the podcast over the next 2 years. Now, this month's episode really does serve as a bit of an introduction though, not only to me and what's coming on the podcast itself, but it's also an introduction to something that is technically where the Girls Aloud story really begins. The big story here is something that could have changed pop music forever, and not in a positive way, I don't think. You see, before we get to the creation of Girls Aloud on the UK TV series Popstars The Rivals, and the release of their debut single, The Sound of the Underground, which just this month celebrated its 19th birthday, there's actually a piece of the Aloud puzzle that slots in just before all that, that I quite simply could not afford to leave out. A moment so very crucial to the Girls Aloud story that, had it gone the other way, would have changed everything so drastically that this podcast probably would have never existed, and the Pop Force we know today as Girls Aloud would not have been those same legendary gals who've played such an important part in so many of our lives across almost two decades. You know, that butterfly effect could have changed everything about Popstars The Rival's final outcome. An event at the turn of the millennium that became one of the single most iconic moments to ever grace Irish television. But what the heck am I talking about? Something tells me that my Irish Gemini listeners have already picked up what I'm about to put down. At 9 p.m. on November the 15th, 2001, Irish network RTE1 launched their own version of the Popstars reality competition series. Following the huge success of the program in both New Zealand and then Australia, Popstars fast became a global phenomenon, and it didn't take long at all for the show to become an Irish TV success as well. Well, the story of how all this came to be seems to vary from person to person and from what viewers would see unfold on their TV screens. But the gist of it is, the Irish leg of Popstars, who were putting together a mixed gender pop group, auditioned folk for the chance to join said pop group. The group, which would go on to be very imaginatively titled Six due to its number of members, was the final product. And while there were a couple of Irish hit singles that did come from Six, it was ultimately not meant to be. Just as Six would turn out to not be a certain Derry girl's destiny, but rather more a stepping stone to much, much better things. A striking young girl from Derry with the voice of a living angel walks into her audition for Ireland's Pop Stars and starts belting out Roxette's It Must Have Been Love. She barely makes it through the first 10 seconds of her initial audition before Judge Louis Walsh interrupts and pushes her through to the next round.
Leave the winter on the ground.
Louis makes an immediate decision on Nadine from Derry.
A state of...
I'm going to do this one, we'll see you after then.
Nadine was overjoyed, and naturally so were the viewers, who were already being manipulated by production to really root for Coyle. In just those first 10 seconds of her audition alone, viewers were shown that Nadine would most likely be the series' breakout star. Viewers cried along with Coyle as she made it through to the final 12 and joyously watched as Louis Walsh travelled to Nadine's family home in Derry to tell her and her parents that she'd be leaving her hometown to join the band. An exciting time for a young girl looking for her big break, and an even more exciting time for the studio heads who saw nothing but ratings and dollar signs in her story. However, from the moment Nadine entered the communal house she would share with her six bandmates, things began to rapidly go downhill for her Irish heroine. On her first day in the house, each of the members were individually asked to record info spots on camera about themselves. You know the drill, name, age, where they were born, blah, 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 etc., etc. With absolute determination.
Well, you said that with some determination.
I'm ready.
Okay. Whenever you're ready.
Nadine cheerfully opened her interview with a line that some 20 years later is still considered one of the single most iconic moments to have aired on Irish television or ever uploaded to YouTube.
Nadine Coyle, I'm from Lorcal and Derry. Date of birth 15th of the 6th, 85. Make me a Gemini. And what date of birth did I say tonight? 15th of the 6th.
For those of you like myself who are terrible with numbers, the youngest you could be to enter any of the pop star shows across the world was 18 years of age. The year was 2001, and Nadine had entered the competition as an 18-year-old, born on the 15th of June, 1983, as stated by Nadine on her audition application. Things clearly began to spiral when Nadine, in that clip I just played for you all, slipped up and subsequently shared her actual date of birth. Yes, she absolutely was a Gemini, but she was actually a 16-year-old Gemini and not an 18-year-old one. What Came Next made for incredible television and remains one of the greatest moments to come from reality programming as Nadine doubles down on the lie and insists to producers that she's 18, even searching frantically for her passport and calling home to ask if she'd left it there.
Mama, did you give me my passport whenever...
Nadine phones home looking for her mislaid passport.
Because, Amanda, yesterday I was getting an interview done and I gave the wrong date of birth. I gave a wrong date of birth anyway. So I'm just looking for my passport. I don't know, I was sitting and I says 15th of the 6th. I thought it was 87, but she says it was 85. 15th of the 6th, 85, which would have made me younger. Like, so I was just sitting there and I was giving, and then I says then later on, God, I think I gave the wrong date of birth. I know, tell me about it. I don't know. If my passport's in Derry, what do you do?
Post it down to us.
Just post it down, I have to.
Nadine, your date of birth is something that you normally lose. I know. So I just panicked
when I... No, it was me. Like, it was me should have panicked. That's why I says, God, is that right?
In an interview after the fact, Nadine revealed that her plan was to find the passport and hand it over to production as a way of saying, you know, send me home, I'm 16. And while the footage certainly looks like a 16-year-old in pure embarrassment looking for something she was never going to find just to validate her lie, in the end, and off camera, Nadine finally told pop stars judge Linda Martin the truth about her age.
While the cameras were not rolling, Nadine finally broke down and confessed to Linda that her real date of birth is the 15th of June, 1985, making her 16.
In fact, looking back on it all, the incident with Nadine did and has gained a considerable amount of momentum globally, first on television and now on the World Wide Web. And it was certainly more momentum than pop group Six could ever drum up on their own as a pop group. Now, of course, as the world's biggest Nadine Coyle apologist, I have a bit of a theory on this whole debacle that I believe rightfully points all the fingers at RTA1 and the production team of the Irish leg of Popstars. There were also a small number of TV appearances that it seems Nadine was required to make post the big eruption heard across Ireland. TV appearances where she was essentially sent out to receive morning television attacks disguised as questions about her decision to quote-unquote lie to all of Ireland.
When you applied, you obviously told your parents, and were they behind you telling the lie mm-hmm. the whole time?
Mm-hmm. They said, if you want to do this, we're behind you doing it. You know what I mean? If you want to drop out now and leave it, they told me what could be the consequences. They said, you know, it could be pop star's liar and, you know, Nadine's a liar and all this kind of thing. And I said, no, she'll not get to that stage. It'll make a big deal.
Yeah, and you said that the public were being genuinely nice to you. Mm-hmm. But has anyone been nasty to you? Have you had anything bad for telling lies on national television?
Not at all. You get any time you're mentioned on the papers or whatever, it's always, you know, like, pop star's liar or, you know, Nadine, you know, things like that. But you just get used to
it. The headlines? Is that what they were?
Say,
for example, if you had been knocked out in the first two stages for being only 16, mm-hmm. and then you seen someone else get through mm-hmm. and went to the stage, how would you have felt about that from a viewer's point of view? How would you have felt?
If I was a viewer watching somebody done what I
done. And someone done what you done, how would you feel, honestly? Oh,
yeah. Honestly, I would have done it myself if I was the viewer, because I did do it, so I would say, you know.
But you don't say anything wrong with telling the lie, do you? But you seem justified that what you've done was the right thing
to do. I feel very strongly about this, can you tell?
I think I done the right thing. I was happy I done it. I'm still, you know what I mean, I'm not proud of having the lie about my age. I wish it had been 16, but it wasn't. And because of what I done, I met loads of brilliant people and all that.
So.
There really seemed to be this push that Nadine's little white lie was a huge manipulation and a much bigger betrayal of the show's trust than it actually was. Nadine spoke quite often about the fact that prior to the incident, her age was only brought up the once, on day one of the audition process, when she filled out her application form. Nadine propelled herself further and further into the competition until it was too late. She finally saw her opportunity to become the star that we all know she is by breaking the rules just to get into this group, to finally achieve her dream of pop stardom. But of course, that dream was filled with a teenager-sized level of deception, which leads into my theory. I do not believe for one second that production weren't privy to Nadine's actual age, at the very least before Louis Walsh visited Nadine's family home in Derry to tell her that she'd made the band. I do not believe for one second that a 16-year-old girl was able to outsmart all of the industry people involved in the show, everyone from administration right down to the production crew. I really do think that they saw a scandal in Nadine's story very early on, and in the spirit of early noughties reality television, where production would have seen this as the ratings goldmine it would turn out to be, capitalised on it. And perhaps even exploited our Dear Nadine's hopes and dreams just for a juicy storyline to bring in a few extra ratings. Reality TV was still very fresh in those days, and following the American formula, this kind of drama was exactly the sort of shit producers on these reality shows prayed for, regardless of the country. And in the continued spirit of those early days of noughties reality television, the story of Nadine's exit from the group broke before the episode even aired, which is something that happened a lot online with many of these shows back in that time. The headlines labelling her everything from naughty Nadine to the pop star's liar. And while all of this was technically true, there's something a bit icky to me looking back on it all now. Nadine, a 16-year-old, had broken the rules of becoming a member of the pop group Six by lying about her age. They then boot her out of the house and the band, send her back home, and then wheel her out to do a press and morning TV tour where she was grilled by absolute douche canoes on British morning television, just like the snippet I played for you all earlier. In hindsight, for me at least, it just adds a bit of a dark cloud over the entire thing, which might explain why Nadine herself told Ian Starrett at the Irish Newsletter back in 2002 that she very much felt like she had been exploited for ratings. I bloody agree, to be frank with you. At the end of the day, even if Nadine had been 18, it was the responsibility of, at the very least, production to make sure every one of those teenagers were the age they all said they were. Lie or no lie, this was still a workplace and checks are made very early on in these situations. So how on earth was it missed by every person working on Irish pop stars? Of course, as the Nadine apologist I am, I could be wrong. I doubt it though. Many fans prefer the idea that Nadine was some kind of genius mastermind who, on national television, convincingly tried searching for a passport she knew was not in her possession. And while even I have gotten quite a lot of laughter out of watching that date of birth slip up on YouTube, whether you believe my theory or the Nadine mastermind theory, either or are more than okay, especially from the lens of a 16-year-old girl desperately looking for her big break. And while Nadine's stunt on Irish pop stars would see her dreams of pop stardom shatter all around her, it wasn't long at all before TV viewers would see Nadine again. Only this time, not only was she not going anywhere, she, along with four other remarkable women, was about to change pop music forever. Episode 2 will also cover debut single Sound of the Underground and the Gals' debut album of the same name, plus the rest of the singles and videos that came from that debut. Not only that, but I'll also be joined for the entire episode by Anthology's very first special guest, Alauda. The truly wonderful Craig from the brilliant Happy Valley Books blog will be joining me via satellite from his studio as we get stuck right into those first few releases and what it was like to watch the girls' creation on global television. All relevant information will be posted on The Record Doctor's official website. That's www.therecorddoctor.com. The Record Doctor being my weekly radio show that airs every Thursday night from 8 p.m. Melbourne time right across the globe and exclusive to Mixcloud. Each week I take my listeners on different trips through pop and dance music with new music mixtapes, artist features, dance classics editions, themed top 20 countdowns and stacks more. I've actually hosted about 6 Girls Aloud specials over the years for the show as well, and my 3 most recent Aloud episodes are actually all available on Mixcloud forever to replay. Episode 253, which is the most recent one, aired on November the 4th and saw me count down my top 30 Girls Aloud B-sides and rarities. Episode 248, which aired on September 16th, saw me counting down my top 30 Girls Aloud songs in general of all time, which was a total rush from start to finish to not only record, but then listen back to when it went live. And then, of course, the episode I never wanted to have to do, and subsequently the hardest episode of the show I've ever had to put together. Episode 247, which aired on September the 9th, my 2-hour radio tribute to the late and great Sarah Harding, whose death this year we are all still grieving. leaving. In that tribute episode, which sounds nothing like any previous episode of The Record Doctor, I featured voice messages from fans the world over who were grieving the loss of such a beautiful force of light. I talked at length myself about what Sarah means to me and tried to give her the send-off and tribute that she actually deserved. Many of our fellow Allouders who listened to the episode when it aired said that it was the best tribute they'd experienced since her passing and that it helped them in their own grieving process, which was a very big deal for me because the episode also helped me in my own grieving process for Sarah. The Record Doctor every Thursday night from 8 p.m. Melbourne time and kicking off on January the 6th after an unplanned extended break that saw me being operated on in hospital, not once, but twice. Long story short, but my appendix burst 4 days before I actually ended up in hospital because I'm a bit of a stubborn idiot who hates hospitals and thought it would pass. I can almost laugh about it now, but it's entirely the reason the podcast didn't start mid-December as I'd originally planned, because I was in a very uncomfortable hospital bed. In the meantime, though, episodes 247, 248, and 254 of The Record Doctor are Girls Aloud artist feature episodes and should keep you company and satisfied until January the 6th. www.therecorddoctor.com and subscribe to the show on Mixcloud. Before I do head off for the month, though, I'd like to get into what inspired the title of this podcast. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue and is a bit of a lengthy bugger, but if you know, you know, you know. We all know the lyric from Biology, of course, being, "You can't mistake my biology." Back in 2006, a promotional press release hyping the girls' first ever greatest hits collection, The Sound of Girls Aloud, surfaced with the line, "You can't mistake our anthology." Genius. And while the inspo story perhaps stops right there, the genius of the entire press release itself, I think, captures why so many of us found and still find Girls Aloud to be the most irresistible and freshest sounding pop group of any generation. Quickly go grab yourself a drink and maybe even a snack for the single greatest press release in all of music history. It's time for a bedtime story, folks. Quote, "They call it manufactured pop as if that was something to be ashamed of, but we are a manufacturing country. Down our conveyor belts come cars, shoes, biscuits, guns, and pop bands. Useful things and beautiful things. Things that make us go faster and things that make us feel like we are going faster. Things that we love passionately for a day and then throw away, and things that we love passionately for a day and then keep forever. Being able to plan for and make our necessary things, instead of relying on accidents or nature to supply them, is one of the first signs that a society has achieved civilization. And what could be more necessary than pop music? What else should we aim to pump out in such greedy, thrilling, giddying amounts? The factory is a democratic place. Sometimes the people working on the floor come cruising in on a Monday morning, still wearing Saturday night's makeup and Sunday morning smile, and say, sod this. They pull off their hairnets and jump onto the conveyor belt themselves. They announce that they are pop stars now. They make a band. That's allowed in the factory because we are a manufacturing country, and that means we are also allowed to manufacture ourselves. We are allowed to change our futures. We are Girls Aloud. And in the band we manufacture, we don't have to smile if we don't want to. We won't have dance routines that ruin our hair. We don't sing songs where we pretend that we're scared or that we can't run in our heels or that we don't know exactly what we want. We don't need no beauty sleep. We think you're off your head. We text as we eat. We flirt while we work. We flick our finger at the world below. If we'd known or if we'd cared, we would have stood around the kitchen in our underwear." When Jack Kerouac wrote On the Road in 1957, he said the people he loved the most were the mad people who burnt like the fabulous yellow Roman candles, who were mad to live, mad to talk. We saw it on a t-shirt once. But anyone who was mad to live wouldn't want to be a Roman candle. Roman candles are the rubbish ones. They're over in 30 seconds and they don't even spin or fly. If we were a firework, we'd be a limousine full of dynamite. and we'd put the fire out with vodka. If we could be bothered. If you know someone who sounds like us, we'll give you a tenner. If you like someone better than us, frankly, we don't care. We're girls allowed. We're made in Britain. End quote. And that is how you press release, my friends. Oh my God. Finally winding down on episode one of You Can't Mistake Their Anthology. I hope you all had a truly lovely Christmas, if you celebrate, of course. A very blessed with no stress holiday season to you all, and I genuinely hope that your New Year's celebrations are full of joy and dancing and that they're COVID free. Let's all manifest a happier and gentler 2022 ahead, please. And in its entirety too, because God knows we need it. Stay safe, hug your loved ones, flick your finger at the world below, and listen to Girls Aloud, of course. Episode 2 covering Pop Stars The Rivals and Sound of the Underground, featuring special guest Craig. That drops January 31st, 2022. More info at The Record Doctor's website and social media accounts. I've said it 100 times, www.therecorddoctor.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope to have you all back in the new year as I am joined by special guests as we cement the Girls Aloud legacy into podcast platforms everywhere. Special shout out to the following YouTube accounts. Irish pop star snippets that you heard throughout the episode came courtesy of YouTube accounts James Webb, Six Irish Pop Stars, Alouder for Life, Aloud Gallery, and Encoil Fan. For the 100th time, you can catch me every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Melbourne time for my weekly radio show on Mixcloud called The Record Doctor. But that's not all. I am also a co-host alongside the glorious Eliza Day of the brilliant, even if I do say so myself, Danny and Kylie Minogue commentary podcast, This Is Disco. The Record Doctor available on Mixcloud with stacks of older episodes ready for replay. And This Is Disco, wherever you get your podcasts from. See you all in the new year. Bye now.
You Can't Mistake Their Anthology is a monthly pop podcast written, edited, and produced by Adam Eve for The Record Doctor.